At least 116 million U.S. adults suffer from chronic pain. That's more than the number affected by heart disease, diabetes, and cancer combined. The annual economic cost of chronic pain, including healthcare expenses and lost productivity, is $560 to $635 billion annually. That's according to a new report released by the Institute of Medicine, and that's the subject of this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Myra Christopher joins us. She is the president and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics. She also holds the Kathleen Foley Chair for Pain and Palliative Care at the center, and she served on the IOM committee that released the report entitled Relieving Pain in America, a Blueprint for Transforming Prevention, Care, Education, and Research. Myra, when reports like these are released, there's discussion around what the report is and what it is not. So, for the record, what is this report on pain from the Institute of Medicine designed to communicate, and what is it not?
Laurel, as part of the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act of 2010, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Sebelius, was tasked with charging the Institute of Medicine to do a study on the treatment, education, and research regarding pain in the United States. The committee had a very specific charge. We have a five-point charge. One is to review and quantify the public health significance. So the numbers that you just called out are part of that, an important part of that. To identify barriers to appropriate pain care and strategies to reduce those barriers. So this report's both descriptive and prescriptive. To identify demographic groups and special populations that may be disparately undertreated, although undertreatment is across the board. To identify and discuss scientific tools and technologies that are currently available and research and data that we need to improve the situation. And finally, to discuss the possibility of public-private partnerships to reach our overall goal, which is societal reform.
So let's talk about those numbers first. 116 million U.S. adults, more than heart disease, diabetes, and cancer combined. The cost, $560 to $635 billion a year. Were these numbers a surprise to you, or were they close to what you expected?
The answer is yes and no. You know, Laurel, there have been various studies that have pegged the number of people struggling with chronic pain at between 75 million and 130 million. And because the numbers are so astounding, I have personally chosen to use the most conservative number that was available, as have others. For example, the Mayday pain group recently did a report, and they used a number of 76.2 million. But one of the things that we did as a committee of the IOM was to commission research by two really leading health economists, Dr. Daryl Gaskin, who is at Johns Hopkins, and Patrick Richard, who is at George Washington University, to define these numbers in a way that we were confident and willing to defend them. So the 116 million, the number of people who actually struggle with this issue, was not so different that it was shocking to me. Now, I think it will be extremely shocking to many Americans. The number that really just sort of knocked my socks off was the cost to the United States every year. This number that we are now talking about, $560 to $635 billion, is quite amazing to me. More kind of the most recent estimates that we had that were pretty sound were much less than that, but they were much older than that, and the methodology was not as precise as what we see in this report. The thing that I guess has really astounded me is that if you look at the methodology of the researchers, the numbers that we are reporting out are probably I mean, I'm really confident, are an underestimate because the analytic sample was restricted to adults. It did not include people under 18 years of old. It did not include civilians, nor did it include people who are institutionalized. So, a good example would be nursing home residents who we know, for whom we know pain, chronic pain is a significant issue.
So because of this IOM report, we now have numbers that can pretty much be used across the board. There's a substance behind that instead of projections that you're able to communicate these numbers much more effectively.
Right. And it also, the numbers have also led us to attempt to reframe this issue in some pretty significant ways. The Center for Practical Bioethics has been working specifically and I believe strategically around chronic pain for more than a decade now. And we have asserted consistently that fundamentally the undertreatment of pain is an ethical issue. And we certainly recognize that there are issues related to clinical practice, to professional ethics, to research. I mean, there are all kinds. This is a hoary little critter. But fundamentally, we've argued that it is an ethical issue. We were delighted, I am delighted, as a member of the committee, that there was no argument about that. In fact, one of the guiding principles or underlying principles of the report, the very first one, is that the treatment of pain, of chronic pain in particular, is a moral imperative. In addition, however, the numbers have led us to say this is a major public health issue. When you look at the number of people who are impacted by this, I think it's sort of hard to argue that it is not. But there are other reasons that we've done that as well. So the point I'm making is that we think this is an ethical issue, but we also think that this is a major public health issue in the United States.
So the fact that that's stated at the very beginning, that's somewhat of a foundation for everything else to flow from that. This is an obligation of medical professionals to address this issue.
Right. In the underlying principles, as I said, the first statement is that the treatment of pain is a moral imperative, and the statement goes further to say that it is a professional responsibility and that those in the treating professions have a duty to do so.
The list of underlying principles also contains a note about the conundrum of opioids.
Right.
The center has done considerable work around that issue. Does the IOM report shed any additional light on this issue?
We were aware that people like you would ask us that question. We know there's the diversion and the abuse of prescription pain medications, in particular opioids, is a significant concern, and we certainly acknowledge that. However, we don't address that issue in the report other than to explain why we don't. It was not in our charge, and we were instructed very, very specifically to stay within the boundaries of the charge that HHS had given to us. In addition, if you look at the constitution of the membership of the committee, which includes clinical professionals, healthcare professionals, researchers, ethicists, an author, we really did not, those of us on the committee did not bring the kind of experience and intelligence that would be necessary, probably would be required to involve law enforcement and regulatory people. You know, in the past, the center has done that kind of work, but in the context of this report, we did not.
Still, wouldn't there be some who say or would discount this report because there was that lack of addressing that issue and consider it a serious omission that it was not considered?
Well, we certainly know that when appropriately prescribed and monitored, that the use of opioids for the treatment of pain, a variety of kinds of pain, it can be very important, and we point that out in the report. But again, I believe if people look at the report in its entirety, they will find it a very helpful tool, a very helpful body of work, although we did not, again, specifically address that issue.
The report lists a number of findings and recommendations to improve pain management. In total, then, does this, in your mind, serve as a blueprint or a foundation on how a lot of people and organizations can move forward?
Well, as you noted, the subtitle of the report itself is a blueprint for transforming prevention, care, education, and research. And I am very pleased that in the report, we spent time thinking about that and actually thinking about sort of prioritizing the recommendations that we make in it, to include things that need to be done in the short term. In fact, we've said by the end of 2012, and then things that are we recognize will require more time, and so we've identified them as sort of long-term actions, and we've said that to have been begun by at least the end of 2015, and we recognize that some of these will require much more time than that. But we have tried to be very practical in our approach and very real world in our in the report that we've issued.
Does this report then serve as a launching point for organizations like the Center for Practical Bioethics and others to be able to move forward and in some ways implement the recommendations?
Well, we believe it does. I would characterize this as a clarion call. I mean, frankly, I just don't know how we can continue to ignore this issue as a society. The Center for Practical Bioethics has been working on these issues at a different level for some period of time now through a project that we refer to in shorthand as PAIN.
It's the PAIN Action Initiative, a national strategy.
We have been working at this and had been working on these issues for some time before the IOM committee was actually assembled. We had done regional meetings across the country with stakeholders in Seattle, Chicago, Boston, Tampa, and I'm missing the fifth, San Diego, and had learned from people who were providing care and people who were teaching pain care providers, doing research about these issues, and pain patients and their families, that the situation is as dire as what the IOM found. As a result of that effort, the Center for Practical Bioethics, frequently here we ask ourselves, given what we know, what are our duties and obligations to others? And we believe that our duty and obligation is, again, to speak in a prophetic voice, as does the report, to raise awareness about this. But we are a practical bioethics center, and our mission is to both raise and respond to issues. So we have convened colleagues and friends with whom we have worked on various projects over the years to come together. Some of those include the American Academy of Pain Medicine, the American Academy of Pain Management, the American Pain Society, the American Pain Foundation, the American Cancer Society, and others, about two dozen groups in all, to come together and to agree that we would, as a group, review and consider the IOM report, and that we would, in addition, share one with the other what our reaction is to it, where we thought our particular groups or our group or organization could have the possibility of really acting on the recommendations to, in a way, create a roadmap of what the future could look like, but also to recognize where there might be gaps in those decisions and where there might be opportunities if we work together to do things that no one of us could do individually or separately. So we met as a group for the first time in mid-May, and we agreed at that time to do the things that I've just articulated, and we will gather again at the end of August to actually decide whether or not we could perhaps form a sort of a loose alliance, a coalition, a consortium. You know, again, these are decisions that will be made collectively. And so the center's not trying to, the center's trying to facilitate that, but not necessarily to drive that in any one direction. But I am very enthusiastic about this. I have great regard for the people that we've convened. We've worked well together in the past. And again, I believe the IOM report does provide us with a springboard to work individually and collectively to make a significant difference.
Why does it take an Institute of Medicine report to move this forward when the problems around the treatment of pain have been obvious, sometimes blindingly obvious, for some time?
Well, I think to some people they have been. But this, the sort of target audience for this report is really the American public. I mean, certainly it will speak to researchers and clinicians, healthcare providers. But we were well aware, as we even thought about language we would use in the organization of the report, that the primary audience needed to be the American public. I think that people who struggle to live day to day with chronic pain are fully aware of this. Unfortunately, I don't think as a society we have really understood the magnitude of it, nor have we embraced the importance of addressing this issue. One of the things that the report clearly says is that any one of us is at risk of becoming a chronic pain patient at any given time, because it can result from an injury, from an illness, from a surgery, that ultimately the pain no longer has usefulness but does not subside. So we are trying to say to the American public, we have got to look at this issue. And in my opinion, there is no more authoritative voice than is the Institute of Medicine. It is truly an honor for me to have been invited to serve with this distinguished group of people to consider this matter.
Let's say the Pain Action Initiative, a national strategy, PAINS, is successful, along with other initiatives and collaborations. So if we waved our magic wand and all of these recommendations were put into place tomorrow, how would things look and work differently on behalf of people in pain?
Well, I guess my first wish would be that much of the problem would be prevented. Chronic pain, as I sort of indicated, often results from the lack of treatment to acute pain, which follows injuries, surgeries, or disease. So I would hope that increased awareness would make the American public much more likely to seek appropriate treatment, would make healthcare professionals aware of the importance of addressing pain before it becomes chronic. So that would be, I guess, my first wish. My second wish, I don't believe we will entirely eliminate chronic pain from our society. My second wish would be that pain would be properly assessed, and that it would not be treated simply as a physical matter. Currently, I would argue that our approach is really biomedical. But in the report, we argue that a more successful approach would be a biopsychosocial model, that when we look at pain, we would look at the complexity of this issue, and that we would recognize that, yes, there are serious physical aspects of this, but there are also serious issues related to prolonged pain with regard to emotional responses, with regard to relationships, with regard to people's notion of self, of who they are. So my second wish would be assessment. My third wish would be that people would receive the care that we believe is most likely to be successful, that they would receive multimodal, interdisciplinary, integrated care, which is, all of those words are synonyms for the same thing of really treating the multiple facets of this problem. So those would be my wishes.
Myra Christopher is the president and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics, also holds the Kathleen Foley Chair for Pain and Palliative Care at the Center, and she served on the IOM committee that released the report entitled Relieving Pain in America, a Blueprint for Transforming Prevention, Care, Education, and Research. For more information on this report, visit iom.edu. That's iom.edu. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.